The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, an overview of Chapter 5, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on October 24th, 2011, in Helsinki, Finland.
So tonight we're doing an overview of Chapter 5, and we're doing an intensive study on the final verse of Chapter 5. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Arjuna uvacha uvacha sanyasam kamanam krishna punya yogam jashansasi yatchaya etayor ekam tanne bruhi sunishchitam.
Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, and then you again recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Text 2. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sanyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasya Karavabhau Tayostu Karma Sanyasat Karma Yoga Vishishyate.
The personality of God had replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation, but of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Why is that? Because you're not doing any work. What is it said? The idle mind is the devil's workshop. So if you're not doing anything, how long will you not do anything? You have to do something. And if you don't know how to do bhakti, then you'll come back to sense gratification again. Text 3. Geyasa nitya sanyasi yo nedvashcha nakansati nirdvandvohi mahabaho sukambandat pramuchyate.
One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty armed Arjuna. Krishna is going to let us in some pretty inside sweet nectar here, how to become completely liberated. Text 4, Sankhya Yoga Pritak Bala Pravadanti Napandita Ekam Apyastita Samyag Ubayor Vindate Phalam. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Text 5. Yat sankhyai prapyate stanam tad yogai rapi gamyate ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha yo pasyati sa pasyati. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Sex 6. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukkamaptum yogataha yoga yukta munir brahma nacharina degachati. Merely renouncing all activities yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay. Well, Krishna is now saying they're actually the same, but there's a difference. So it's one of those one and different sort of things. Yes, analytical study is the same if you take it all the way to the conclusion, but how long will it take you to get to the conclusion? Is it? Just like the elevator and the stairs take you to the same place. That may be fine for a 3-story building. What about a 100-story building, you see? Yeah, it's a fact. The elevator and the stairs will take you to the same place. But which one are you going to take? If you have a 3 o'clock appointment and it's 100 stories, if you want to make it to your appointment on time, you better take the stairs. You only have an hour. You'll never make it up 100 floors in an hour. You see. Text number 7.
Yoga yukta vishuddhatma vijjatatma jitendriya sarvabhutatma bhutatma kuravanapina lipyate.
One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled.
This is an amazing concept, and we could spend the whole lecture on this concept, on this point here.
He's dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him.
Why?
Why is he dear to everyone?
Because everyone is dear to him.
When someone loves you, aren't you inspired to love them in return?
You see?
If someone gives you all kinds of loving kindness and treats you as a dear friend, aren't you inspired to reciprocate? So this is why, you see.
Because everyone is dear to the Vaishnava, suhridam sarabhutanam.
Everyone is dear to the devotee, therefore everyone likes the devotee because he likes them.
You see?
If you want me to like you, then you like me. If you like me, I'm going to like you, you see. If you don't like me, I don't like you, you see. But if you like me, then I will like you. So the devotee likes everybody, therefore everybody likes the devotee. It's a simple psychology.
Text 8-9, naivi kinchat karomiti yukto manyitatat vivit. Pashyan shvindvan prashadhikran asnan gachan svapam shvashan palapan vishvajan grinhan unmisham nimisham api indriyan indriyarteshu vartanta iti dharayan.
A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in eating, but in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that actually he does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. In other words, what's a simple way of saying this? I'm not the body. Simpleton.
All right, this is a very detailed way of saying the person in divine consciousness knows that he's not his body.
Text 10.
Brahman yadaya karmani samdanchata karotiya lipyate nasapapena padmapatram ivam vasa.
One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the real son of the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. If you become a devotee, you become like a lotus leaf.
Text 11. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalar indayarapi yogina karma kurvanti sanganjasvatma shuddhaye.
The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses only for the purpose of purification.
So this is true of the bhakta also. He has nothing to do except purify his senses. Everything he does from morning, from the time he wakes up in the morning or going to bed at night, and even sleeping, everything he does is to purify his senses.
Text 12. Yukta karma palang jaktva shantam apnoti naishtikim.
Ayukta kama karena pale sukto nabadyate.
The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the result of all activities to me.
Wow, that's a pretty simple formula, isn't it?
If you offer the results of all your activities to Krishna, you attain unadulterated peace.
What does that mean? There's another type of peace.
And what is that called?
Adulterated peace.
The material world, they have peace.
Kind of.
But it's adulterated.
What's it adulterated with?
Agitation of the mind.
You can never be fully peaceful until you can become a steadily devoted soul, and then you've attained unadulterated peace because you offer everything to God, to Krishna.
Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled.
Entangled in what? Karma Chakra, the wheel of birth and death. Text 13. Sarvakamani manasa sanyasde sukambashi nandvadare pare dehi naiva kurvan nakarayan.
Translation.
When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates. What is that body? What is that gate city? That's the material body. Neither working nor causing the work to be done. The nine gates, we got two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, there's six. Let's see, then you got the the mouth, that's seven, and then you have the evacuating, you have two evacuating, you have the genitals and the evacuation organ in the back. So that's nine gates. 14. Na kartam na karmani lokasya sajate prabhu na karma palla samyogam sabhavastu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So the modes are really doing everything. Unless one is a liberated soul, one is simply a puppet of the modes of nature. But if you become a liberated soul by engaging your thoughts, words, and deeds in the service of the Supreme, then you no longer are dictated by the three modes of material nature. Now you are Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul. Text 15. Nandate kaschit papam na chaiva sukritam vibhu agane na vritam gyanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. That's an interesting point. Covers their real knowledge? That means every living entity has real knowledge. Everyone has knowledge. Therefore, education means to bring out what is already in them. It's like you go to drill a well somewhere. The water's already there. You just have to drill in and get it extracted so it comes up. So education is not imposing something on the student, but it is drilling in and bringing out what is there, already there within. That's real education. See, the concept of mundane education is you cram the head full of all kinds of facts and figures, you see. What do you do? Regurgitate them on the final exam, and now I'm educated. But you're never really connected with the knowledge within, you understand? But real education, that means to go within, to go through all the ignorance which is covering the real knowledge within, penetrate through all the ignorance with transcendental sound vibration of the Vedic wisdom, and actually contact the real knowledge, that storehouse of actual knowledge which you already have within you. This is why it's stated in the Shvetashvartara Upanishad, Yashya Devi Para Bhaktir Tata Deve Tata Guru Tasyaite Kitita Hirata Pakarshunte Mahatmanaha. Only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of Sri Guru and Sri Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. In other words, when you put complete faith in the words of the spiritual master and in the words of Krishna as given in the scriptures, then you have enlightenment within your heart. Because the knowledge is already there. It's just a cloud covering it. That blows, that faith in Guru and Krishna blows the cloud away. And then there you are, you're an enlightened soul. You see? These are profound knowledge here in the Bhagavad Gita. The most profound wisdom. Text 16. And this is actually confirming what I just said. Text 16. Jnane natu tara jnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham madhitya vajjnanam prakashayati tatparam. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. You got to blow away the ignorance, you see, and then the sunshine is there. Text 17. Tadbuddhayasta atmanas tannishasta parayana Kachans japuna ravritim gyana nirinduta kalamasha.
When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation.
That's very interesting, proceed straight. That means you could proceed crooked also. You understand? The neophyte devotee, sometimes he kind of goes like this, you know. He meanders around a bit. But when you really get properly situated, it's just a straight path. You don't get sidetracked here and sidetracked there. You stay fixed on the path. You see, when does that happen? When your intelligence, mind, and faith, and refuge are all fixed on the Supreme. That's when you become straight, very straight on this pathway, with no, you know, getting lost every now and then and trying to find your way back on the path. Text 18. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmane gabihastani shunni chaivas vipakecha panditasamadarshana. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. Very important verse, how this is called samadarshinaha. Equal vision. Or in English we have the word equanimity. Someone who possesses the quality of equanimity or sameness. He sees everyone as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and he doesn't discriminate, you see. That you are, that I'm friends with you and you are my enemy. Now everyone is, he's friendly to everyone. Everyone's dear to him. Text 19. Ihaiva tairajatas sargo yesham sam yestitam manaha nidosham hi samang brahmatas man brahmanite stitaha. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and they are already situated in Brahman. So if you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, you don't have to wait for death to become liberated. You're already liberated, you see. If you're solidly fixed, you are a liberated soul even walking around Helsinki. You don't have, or, you know, wherever it may be. Lapland or whatever it may be. If you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, you're liberated soul. You're not living in the material world anymore. Text 20. Naprajushat priyam prapya nodvijat prapya cha priyam stita bhuti rasang mudo brahmavid brahmanistetaha. This is this verse is one of the sweetest verses in the whole Gita. Oh. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. When something great happens, don't jump up and down like a little kid. When something bad happens, don't go beat your head against the wall, you see. See everything as the mercy of Krishna. Everything. The good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly. See everything as Krishna's mercy. And you'll be situated as on the transcendental platform. And then Krishna describes a little further about what is the position of such a person who possesses true equanimity. Bhayasprasheshvasaktatma vindajatmani yatsukam sabrahma yuga yuktatma sukam akshayamashnute. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Well, how much bliss do you want, Prabhu? How much bliss do you want, Mataji? You see, how much bliss do you want? A little bit? Medium amount? How would you like unlimited bliss? How would you like to swim in an ocean of unlimited bliss for all of eternity, starting right now? Starting right now. Then all you have to do is situate yourself in this consciousness that everything is the mercy of Krishna. And I have to appreciate His mercy at every minute. It may appear to be good, it may appear to be bad, but it's all Krishna's mercy. So actually, there's nothing that for a devotee, there's no such thing as a bad experience. Everything is a wonderful experience for a devotee. You see. Okay, text 22. Yehi sangsparsha ja boga dukkasyo naya evate adyantan vata konteya nate shuramate buddha. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery. Oh, I love that. That's really good. Krishna is so perfect. In every word of Krishna is so perfect. They take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. In other words, you know, I hate to blow your sense of enjoying the material world, but this is your source of misery. Indeed, the contact of your material senses with the material sense object, that is your source of misery. Sorry, if you had some idea of enjoying, I just gave it a good kick. You can't really enjoy this material world because it's not you. You're not this body. I mean, will I enjoy the sweet rice by sticking my kurta sleeve in the sweet rice? No, I put it in my mouth. So when you try to enjoy this material world, it's not you. It's your kurta trying to get some pleasure out of the sweet rice. It's ridiculous. So don't try to enjoy your senses. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. It's insane. It's crazy. It's foolish. It's asinine. Whatever, you know, words we can use that are decent words. It's absolutely preposterous proposal to try to enjoy this material world because it's just, you can't enjoy it. It's impossible. Oh, son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So Krishna acknowledges they are pleasures, but these pleasures are sources of misery. And people who have any who have their brains, you see, anybody who has half a brain at least, he says, I don't need this stuff, you know. I don't need to mess around with sense gratification anymore. Because it's a one-way road off a cliff. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It's driving your car off a cliff. That's what it is. If I gave you a car and there's a cliff, I said, okay, now drive your car off the cliff. Would you like to do that? Then why are you trying to gratify your senses? Why aren't you engaged in sense gratification? You're just driving your car off a cliff. It's crazy. Don't do that, you see. This is what the sages are telling us. Okay. Text 23. Shokta naiva yad shodam prakshari ravi mokshanat kama krodha bhavang vegam zayukta sausukhi naraha. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and happy in this world. 24. Yanta sukantar aramas tatantar jyotirevaya sayogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuto de gachati. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. Does that mean you just sit down in your closet, you don't go out and do anything? No. Inward means the internal energy, the spiritual energy, and that is connected like Arjuna did. Arjuna went within as he was fighting that battle. Even though it appears he was externally engaged in the sources of misery, actually he was internally engaged because he was offering everything for Krishna. So to go within doesn't mean you close all the doors, turn off the light, go in your closet and chant Om. Doesn't it mean to go within? Go within means do what Arjuna did. He's the perfect follower of the Bhagavad Gita. Every time you figure, how does it apply? But how do you do this? Always think of Arjuna. Arjuna is the perfect example. Right here in the Gita itself, he is the prototype. He is the model of how to follow these teachings. Don't concoct some other idea. Study Arjuna and do what Arjuna does. And then you'll be a perfect master of the science of the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you're off the straight path. You're meandering off into the woods somewhere, getting lost. Okay. Text 25. Labmante brahma nirvanam rishaya china kalamasha. Chana dvaidha yadatmana sarvabhuta hiterata.
Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, and are always busy working, this confirms it, and are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So this proves just what I said. Going within doesn't mean you withdraw from the society. This means you connect with the internal energy within, because Krishna is with everything. A self-realized soul sees Krishna everywhere and sees everything within Krishna and Krishna within everything. So he connects with Krishna in everything. He engages in the welfare work of all living beings by connecting everyone with Krishna. You see?
26. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatidam yatachetasam anbita brahmanirvanam vartate viditatmanam.
Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. Now that's an interesting statement.
Normally they think, well, if he's self-realized, he's already liberated.
He's self-realized, he's perfect. But here, Krishna is saying those who are self-realized are constantly endeavoring for perfection. Interesting statement, huh? You can be a self-realized, someone's there. Are you self-realized? You could be considered self-realized and not perfect yet. And not liberated yet, but you can be self-realized. That's interesting. Concept.
So there are different levels of self-realization. Krishna makes this distinction in chapter 7, text number, I believe it's 2. Manushanam sahasreshu kashtad yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashtin man vitatvataham.
Out of thousands among men, only one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who achieve perfection, hardly even one knows me in truth. So here Krishna is making a distinction between being perfect and actually realizing Krishna. It's interesting. The thing is, these terms, you have to always study the context, because in one context, perfection means realizing Krishna, but so you have to always see the context. In other words, if you look in the dictionary, one word may be used in 10 different ways. The same thing in the Vedic teachings. You have to always understand the context in which the term is being used. Because it can mean a different, the same word can mean a different thing in two different verses, depending on the context. This is important in your studying. You understand context is very important. Perfection can mean one thing in one place and another thing in another place. So to always be aware of that when you're studying the Vedic teachings. That's why we need the commentaries, the purports of the acharyas, to help us understand the proper meaning according to that particular context or that particular verse. Text 27-28, Sparshan kritva bahirbhayang shakshush chayvantate bruvo pranapano samakritva nasabhyantaracharvino yatendriyamano buddhir munir moksha parayana vegatechcha bayakrodho yasadha mukta evasa. Shutting out all external objects, all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated within between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, the transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. This is talking about the mystic yogi. So this gives you a very good understanding of what it means to really be a mystic yogi. Can somebody who goes over here to the Hilton Hotel for a yoga class, is he really a yogi? You know what I'm saying? Is he really considered a yogi? Because he went over to he got certified as a yoga teacher with the Einiger certification, and now he's a yogi. No, here's a real yogi. Somebody who can completely stop breathing for 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 week, 2 weeks, a month, a year, without breathing, then you know he's a yogi. Okay.
He can suspend his inward and outgoing breaths. He can merge the incoming and outgoing breaths together and stop breathing for a year or even more. Then you know you're talking to a real yogi. Otherwise, it's just a joke. These are not yogis. They're bogies. But the bhakti yogi doesn't have to do all these austerities. He's described in the following verse, which is we're going to focus on this verse now. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantam richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So, if you're not able to suspend your incoming and outgoing breaths, you think, well, how can I get liberated? I can't even sit down for 20 minutes in a lotus posture without my knees killing me, you see. How can I possibly suspend my incoming and outgoing breaths? It's just, it doesn't seem within reach. But here's something that is within reach. The points I'm making will be elaborated further in detail. In chapter 6, you'll hear Krishna goes into more detail about the mystic yogis, and then he explains the bhakti yoga system is better. You may say, why is Krishna doing this? If bhakti yoga is the way, then why is he introducing all this, you know, merging the incoming and outgoing breaths and all this other stuff? Well, the reason is Krishna is the most expert salesman. He's the most expert salesman. The master salesman will tell you all about the competition. Actually, even on the internet, you'll see these kind of ads, you know, XYZ software. They'll list all the competitors. There'll be a table. You know, our product does this, 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 and here's our competitors. They do this, this, and this, and this, this, and this. They show you by comparison that their software is better than all the other softwares. They list every single competitor, the whole list, and see the features of all the competitors, and they show that we have more features than the other competitors, therefore you should buy our software. So they're following the example of Bhagavad Gita when they do that, you see. Bhagavad Gita is promoting Bhakti Yoga, but it also gives the other systems. It gives the other systems as well, and then shows you that Bhakti is better. So if somebody says, well, I think Mystic Yoga is better, then you can say, but then you understand that it's not. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita gives, you'll see, especially chapter 6, the next chapter, it gives such detail about these other systems. How you're supposed to sit, how you're supposed to, you know, all these things. In detail, you know, why all these details of this stuff? It's simply to give you a complete, thorough understanding of all the different systems and why Bhakti Yoga is actually the ultimate and the best system. So now, in text 28, we had read about the mystic yogi. Now we're back to the bhakti yogi again. In full consciousness of me, you see. Completely Krishna conscious. And what is that? This is a wonderful definition, very simple terms. What does it mean to be fully Krishna conscious? It means three things, and you can note this down. To know that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, that's the first thing, the supreme owner, and the best friend of all living beings. Those three things. He's the enjoyer of everything, he's the owner of everything, and he's the best friend of all living entities. So how do we understand these three points? Actually, if you take you consider the second point first, it's easy, then it becomes very easy to understand the first point, because Krishna is the owner of everything. He says, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, I own everything. So what does that mean? If you're the owner of something, then you're the enjoyer, isn't it? If you own an apartment, who has the right to come in there and have a good time and live in your apartment? Only you. If you come back from the weekend and somebody moved into your apartment, they're having a party in there, you call the police. These people have taken over my apartment. They've trashed it. They had a beer party in my apartment. What's going on here? It's my apartment. You see, it's my apartment. You don't have a right to come into my apartment and enjoy. This is my place. You see? So Krishna owns everything. So who has the privilege of enjoying it? Krishna. You see? Because Krishna owns everything, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, therefore Krishna is the rightful enjoyer of everything. So those two points are very, very integrally connected with each other, very tightly connected with each other. Being the supreme owner, therefore, naturally, he's the supreme enjoyer. But the beauty of this whole thing is that Krishna is not a tyrant. Even though he owns everything, he's the rightful enjoyer of everything. Suhridam sarabhutanam, he's the best friend. He wants to share it with us. You know, he's the owner. He wants to share it with us so we can be happy. All this that I have, I want to share it with you, you see. But you just simply have to play by the rules. You see. Just like in this country, there's so much opulence. Finland, there's so much opulence. So many nice houses, so many nice forests, so many things here. So many facilities and different kinds of different foods. So many facilities. So who has a right to enjoy the facilities of Finland? The law-abiding citizens. Those who abide by the laws, they're allowed to enjoy this country, get a nice house, and go out and hike in the woods or whatever. But those who don't want to obey the laws, they're thrown into the prison, you see, in some dark prison cell, an unpleasant atmosphere. But those who actually reciprocate with the government, they're given full facility to enjoy. Yes, this country is enjoy this country. Finland is your country, you have a great time here, you see. So in the same way, God is giving facility to those who honor his position as the owner and the enjoyer. All right, you honor my position, then I give you full facility. I want you to enjoy it too. You come and enjoy it. So Krishna is the true benefactor or well-wishing friend of all living entities. Say, well, he must be the friend of his devotees, but how he could be the friend of the non-devotees? He has the modes of material nature, the karma chakra. How you can say Krishna is the friend of those who aren't his devotees? But he is, because just as the state is trying to reform the prisoners and make them law-abiding citizens, Krishna is trying to reform those who rebelled against him. He's given them facility to enjoy the material world. And he's giving them facility also to come back to him by appearing here to give this knowledge and by sending his devotees to give this knowledge, by sending spiritual masters to give this knowledge, by distributing this knowledge in various ways. He's giving everybody the opportunity to come back and be an eternal resident of his abode, to re-enter into his pastimes. Did you know that you were originally in the pastimes of Krishna? You were a participant in the pastimes of Krishna. But curiosity killed the cat. He wondered, what it would be like if I was the supreme? So you got a chance to try it. So you can get free of your idle curiosity by, you know, school of hard knocks. So now we have the opportunity to go back to our original position by hearing from guru, by hearing from sadhus, by hearing from scripture. Now we can go back to our original position as the eternal servant of Krishna. So that's a little bit of an overview and a little bit more detail in 59, text 59. Are there any questions? Yeah.
How to purify our motive by which we're doing our service?
Purify our motives by doing service? You answered your own question. By serving Krishna, your motives. You said, how can we purify our motives by doing service?
No, how can I purify my motives? Because then I'm doing some service, my motive is not pure.
Oh, while doing service, yeah. How can I purify my motives while doing service? Of course, by doing service, they will become purified, but there's sometimes a tendency to do a service with a motive. And we have to watch out for that, because that's taking us off the path now. Even though I'm doing the service, I'm veering off the pathway, because instead of wanting to please Krishna, instead of wanting to put Krishna in the center, I want to put myself in the center, you see. To just see Prabhu's and Mata, Jesus, how great I am. Everyone notice how great I am. Please notice how great I am, you see. We have some motive, sometimes for recognition. Actually, we don't need to even worry about it, because actually, one who gives all recognition to Krishna, he becomes the most recognized person automatically. We don't need to aspire for becoming recognized. It happens automatically. Those who desire to become recognized, they may temporarily get recognition, but then they lose it also. Usually there was one devotee, he was a very recognized devotee, big preacher in Europe. He organized the whole Europe practically, and now he's gone. He got so much recognition, but now where is he? So if one has some motive for recognition, you may get it temporarily. But one who has no desire for recognition, simply wants to see that Krishna becomes recognized all over the world as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that person becomes the most recognized person, you see. More recognized than anyone. Ebeyas Gushuk Tribhavana. His fame is spread all over the three worlds. A person who has no desire, no personal motivation for recognition, sense gratification, anything. A person who is completely free of any motives, his only desire is to please Krishna, you see. Ahaitaki bhakti, devoted without any motives, free of any motive, you see. There's haitaki bhakti and ahaitaki bhakti. Haitaki means you have some motive. I want to do devotional service so I'm recognized as a great transcendentalist. Or for some other reason, you see. But we need ahaitaki bhakti, not haitaki bhakti, you see. We need to have that pure, unmotivated bhakti, because then we will never leave Krishna consciousness. So how do you do that? The first thing is to realize it's not worth, these material motives aren't worth it. You have to have that philosophical understanding, they are not worth it. Like one devotee very wisely said, someone may have desire, yes, I want to have disciples. You see, Maitreya Prabhupada left. And now, you know, when Prabhupada left the planet, then the RGBC man told us like that. He said, one may desire, yes, I want to have disciples, I want to have followers, you see. He said, one has that desire, Krishna will give you the flowers, but you'll get the followers, but you won't get Krishna. You see? So, we should have only one motive, and that is to please Krishna. We shouldn't have that only desire. And we can accept that other things if they are favorable for serving Krishna. I can take a position, or I can take a disciple. It's like even giving a class, you're giving a position, someone is being, okay, now you sit on the Vyasasana as a representative of Vyasadeva, you see. That's a recognition, is to be sitting on the Vyasasana is recognition. Now you are representing Srila Vyasadeva. That is a recognition. So it's not that if I accept some position of recognition that means I have some motive, material motive. No. It's done humbly in the service to one's spiritual master. It's like when Srila Prabhupada was first offered the Vyasasana in Los Angeles, a grandiose, full-on Vyasasana. He started crying. He said, I am not worthy to sit here, but I'm doing so on behalf of my spiritual master. So one can accept all prestige and all position and all followers and all opulence. If that comes in one's service and is required for one's service, then one can accept everything. But to have any desire other than pure devotional service, that will deviate one from the path and cause one to fall down in due course of time. Does that answer your question? Any other questions? Yes.
Is it possible to do devotional service without faith to Krishna?
Is it possible to render devotional service to Krishna without faith?
Can you do it without faith? Faith is the foundation of devotional service. You could do it without faith, but it's not going to be very solid devotional service. You can build a building without a foundation also. But how solid would that building be? You see, you can do it without faith, but it's not very, it's very weak, and you can fall down at any time. So you must have faith to do devotional service that's going to be strong and solid and steady. You must have faith. So how do you get faith? You have to associate with devotees who have faith. You find devotees who are very strong in their faith, you associate with them, you serve them, you hear from them, because by that association of those who have faith, you will get faith.
In the beginning of the lecture you said, you love me, I love you. If you love me, then I will love you. But a Vaishnava is all transcendental, whether one loves him or not. He loves everybody.
Right, but the materialistic person, unless somebody loves him, he doesn't want to love them. So because the Vaishnava loves him without any motive, people tend to very much like the devotees, you see. But these people aren't trying to cheat me, you see. The point is, and that's why people love the devotees so much, because the devotees love, causelessly love, without any motives. They causally love everyone. Therefore, people love the devotees. Those devotees who are pure in heart, like the Goswamis, dira dira jana priyo priya paro priya karo. The scribe, the six Goswamis, were dear to everybody, the gentle and the ruffians. They were dear to everyone because they loved everyone without any condition. Therefore, everyone tended to love them. Even the ruffians liked them very much. The Gunda class, they also liked the six Goswami. Anything else? Yes?
Yes, Prabhu, what is the, like the consequence of having material desires but not letting them serve as an impetus to render service?
What's the question?
Question is,
did you get the question? I'm a little hard of hearing, so try speaking up.
So what I mean is that if you have desires, but you don't let them be the impetus of your service, what is the consequence?
If you have desires, but you don't let them be the impetus of your service, what is the consequence? Well, these are material or spiritual desires?
Material desires.
If you have material desires, but you don't let them be the impetus of your service. No, that's all right. If you have some material desires, but you know they're not really good, and your impetus for service is something else, you're not doing the service to fulfill those material desires, and they're still there, that's a natural thing. For a neophyte devotee, you're going to have so many material desires sitting in your heart. And that's okay. That it's understood that you're going to have so many material desires, so you just have to learn how to ignore them. That's why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, in the morning, you should beat your mind with shoes 100 times. And in the evening, you beat your mind 100 times with broomstick. Because there's so many desires are there, you see. Especially for a young man, so many desires. A young woman, same thing. So many material desires are there. So you just have to say no. Prabhupada said like that, you know, when the senses scream, you say no. The tongue says, give me this, you say no. The genitals say, give me this, you say no. You have to be very expert at saying no to your senses, because there can be so many desires screaming, give me this, give me this, give me, give me, give me. You say, no, 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 no. Like that. That's how you have to be within your heart. You have to say, very firmly say no to those material desires. Every time they come up, no. I want to have sex. No. I want to eat this. No. Only prasadam, you see. I want to do this. No. It's not for Krishna. No, you cannot. Likewise, you have to be very strong with yourself, you see. And this way, gradually they will go away. They'll stop bothering you. You have to fill your heart up with spiritual desires, you see. Your heart is like a hotel. And if every room is full of spiritual desires and material desires come to your heart, to try to check in for the night, but the sign will say no vacancy. You have to go to another hotel. You have to fill up your heart with so many spiritual desires, you see. That I want to spread this movement. I want to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. You see, that should be your desire. I want to spread this movement. I told Prabhupada when I first got initiated, he was so pleased. I said, Prabhupada, I want to spread this movement. And he wrote me back such a nice letter. He was so happy that I wanted to spread this movement. He said, I can see that you're a very sincere, enthusiastic boy. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. Prabhupada gave me all encouragement. Yes, keep thinking that way, Sankarshan Das. I want to spread this movement. I want to spread this movement. I want to spread this movement. Make that your desire, a burning desire in your heart, that I cannot tolerate to see one person on this planet who is not Krishna conscious. I want to revolutionize this planet as much as I can do, along with the other devotees. We want to stop this nonsense Kali Yuga and bring a Satya Yuga on this planet. The golden era of Lord Chaitanya, you see. Make a burning desire in your heart to spread this movement. The pure bhakti will manifest everywhere, in every heart, in every home, in every street corner. Pure bhakti everywhere. Make that your desire, you see. And those material desires will come. They won't be attractive anymore. Because there's nothing sweeter than being a preacher. There's no greater taste than being a preacher, you see. Some devotees don't even want to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. They just want to take birth after birth to preach, distribute books, and make devotees. They get so much taste in book distribution, they don't even want to go back to Godhead until everybody has a book here on this planet. There's so much nectar in this preaching and making devotees. You see. Some devotees, they're just praying they can take birth after birth until the whole world is Krishna conscious. Because they get so much taste in this preaching. You see. So now you just absorb yourself. I want to spread this Krishna consciousness movement like anything. I want to see that all of Finland becomes Krishna conscious, that the whole Helsinki, the whole Europe, the whole planet, I want to see the whole world become Krishna conscious. Make that your desire, you see. To play a vital role in this movement of Lord Chaitanya, you see. And then those material desires, they won't stand a chance. They won't stand a chance. You'll be tasting so much nectar from sankirtan ruchi, its desire to spread Krishna consciousness. Anything else? I suppose 8 o'clock is probably the cutoff point. So, well, this is the last one. Go ahead.
Thank you, Prabhu. Is it possible to think that the mind is teacher?
Mind is a teacher? Sometimes the mind can be a teacher. When you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, your mind will become your guru. But right now, your mind is your enemy. It's a bogus guru. It's stated like that, the mind is either the worst enemy or the best friend. So when you actually master the art of controlling your mind will become your best friend. Your mind will... when you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, you will make spiritual advancement by associating with your own mind. But you have to become, solidly fixed before you reach that. Right now, your mind is like a naughty child who is constantly misbehaving, drooling all over everything and drawing crayons all over the walls. You have to constantly curb that little rascal down, keep him... But when he grows up and becomes mature, he becomes a great help. He helps cleans the house, washes the dishes, so many things. So, right now your mind's like a little rascal child, a naughty little brat running and screaming around the house. But when that mind becomes mature, it's like a child that's grown up and renders wonderful service to the parents. So in that way, your mind will become like that. If you take this process seriously, as Rupa Goswami is describing it in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that mind will become eventually your best friend. Okay, we'll stop here. We thank you all very much for your participation in this. Is this a Bhaktivedanta College function?
Yes.
In Bhaktivedanta College, please become true Bhaktivedantas. That is my request. Ones who know the truth, and those who know the truth, that's a Vedanta, and one who live the truth, that is bhakti, you see. To know the truth is Vedanta, to live it is bhakti. So you know it and live it. That should be the motto of Bhakti Vedanta College. Know the truth and live the truth. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Thank you.